Hi, thanks for staying with us on Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris. With me is Sharad Kutan. Now, as we enter the second year of the pandemic, is the government's economic approach one that is still reacting to short-term shocks? Joining us on the line now, we have Yin Xiaolong. He's the Senior Research Associate at Khazanah Research Institute. Good evening, Xiaolong. Now, you co-wrote an opinion piece in which you claimed that Malaysia's financial aid and public health measures have been deployed in parallel ways rather than in unison. Now, I'm wondering, Xiaolong, in your mind, what would a synchronized approach with public health and financial aid, what would that look like?
Hi, good evening, guys. I think a synchronized approach would say, let's rewind back a week to the original announcement that there was going to be an MCO in the economic heartland. And if things had been really synced up, I think we would have heard from the Prime Minister, yes, there's an initial decision in terms of public health to declare an MCO. And immediately following that, I think he would be able to announce all the economic relief packages or measures that people could expect to help them through this difficult time. And immediately following his address, I think all the relevant ministers should have come online to talk about the SOPs. The SOPs should have been ready to be dispersed on day one. Instead, unfortunately, what we saw was a sort of a drag over several days from the initial announcement to the actual instantiation of the MCO, and then SOPs were released sometimes over, 1 or 2 day period, and then sometimes changed again later. And then just yesterday, 1 week after the initial announcement, then we get the financial package. So, I think a way to look at it, it's like, episodic TV, right? The old model is for episodes to come out once a week. You get left on a cliffhanger, and then in the meantime, you speculate, you discuss it with your friends, what might have happened. What we really need for pandemic communications is a sort of Netflix model. We want to be able to binge on all the episodes and have all the information at once. Because, if I'm running a business or if I'm a worker, if I'm a self-employed person, I really need to know from the get-go, how do I prepare for this? How do I get ready for this? And for that reason, you need to have everything synchronized.
Xiaolong, thanks for bringing it back to popular culture. I want to ask you, though, in terms of the complexities of, say, the Malaysian state, whether, much of the problems lie in the fact that there's a one-size-fits-all kind of approach for the Federation, which, consists of, the three main territories themselves, so diverse in terms of their needs, and then, of course, with the states, and how much are states not involved in this creation of some sort of coherent approach to both the public health measures as well as the question of financial need that, is there on the ground?
From the sounds of it, it looks like states have a fair degree of autonomy on how to decide to respond, like, slang oil is one I'm aware of. But I think the communication between the federal government and the state governments has improved since last year, where I think there was a recent meeting of the Menteri's Besar and the Prime Minister where issues were discussed, although it's not immediately clear to what degree there is sort of coordination all the way down from federal to state and local level on those kind of issues. Sometimes I think federal has its own momentum and the state governments also have those. I think it's important to ensure that everybody's on the same page. And that's why, in the article that my colleague Nazeha Mohamed Noor and myself wrote, we tried to emphasize the need for a grand plan. We need a grand narrative that we can all focus on, and that is the plan to get Malaysia out of the pandemic. And it's not just a health plan, it's also an economic plan and an overall all of government, all of society plan, because we are on the cusp of getting into year two of the pandemic now. We should have that plan, and that is the narrative that should be communicated, and that's the narrative that should pull all the disparate parts together, whether they be federal and state government or different ministries and agencies. And we should all be aware of how we're progressing and how we can contribute towards that.
All right, well, let's touch on that grand plan in a little bit, but I do want to come back and touch on something that you mentioned a bit earlier about the announcement of the lockdowns, the announcement of the SOPs, the delayed announcement of the SOPs, and then the subsequent revision of those SOPs. What has been the cost of all of that, including the announcement of an emergency? Is it just public confidence, business confidence, as you note in your opinion piece?
I think confidence may be one of the early casualties. Prior to that is uncertainty. And I think uncertainty about, you know, does my business get to operate? Does it not? What will my cash flow be this month? How many workers can I keep on payroll? If I'm a worker, can I stay on the payroll? Do I still have a job at the end of this month? We took one hit last year. Can we take another hit this year when we were expecting and we were told that things would get better? I think that is one of the key problems that we face. And some businesses, some types of subsectors were told that they couldn't operate at the start of the MCO. Then after making that clear, there was some change, there was some turnaround, then they were allowed to operate. But sometimes that can cost you hundreds of millions of ringgit per day, you know, when you're caught in limbo before a decision is made. And the question naturally comes forward, well, this is not our first time. We're not in January 2020 anymore. We're now in 2021. We've done this before. What's substantially different now about this MCO that, you know, certain sectors need to be re-reviewed if they were already given permission to operate in the last MCO?
Xiaolong, you are perhaps unique in that you had a perspective from inside the machine. What do you think is going on? Why do we still have government struggling to standardize, you know, SOPs? As you say, you know, 9 months, you know, 10 months after the pandemic, you know, broke out here in Malaysia.
I mean, I used, as you were alluding earlier, I used to work in, you know, federal government as well as state government. And I think coordination and administration, you know, they remain perpetual challenges for any organization, and particularly in something as big as government. And there's always an ongoing effort to try and make things work better, make things move more smoothly. And this is, you know, whether it's coming from the Prime Minister, from the ministers, from the Chief Secretary of Government, who, you know, holds a fair degree of power and these kind of things, to down to the individuals, you know, secretaries, generals of the various ministries. It really is an ongoing process of trying to, you know, make governance in Malaysia better. And I think the pandemic has tested this capability. And, you know, just yesterday I was wondering, you know, because two of the issues that I work on are kind of more long-term issues like climate change and industrial policy, and they involve a, you know, a multi-decade time frame. And it made me wonder if our administrative system and our social system was so strained by this experience of the pandemic, what can we actually bring to bear in terms of, say, addressing things like catastrophic climate change or the challenges of trying to get economically inclusive development on a widespread basis? So I think there really needs, you know, you always need very alert managers and leaders who can tell where bottlenecks exist and try and resolve those bottlenecks through political will rather than let things carry on as they were before. And it's no joke, because we're not the only country that's struggling, but some countries are clearly doing better, and it's important to sort of take lessons from there as well.
Right. Well, then, Xiaolong, I mean, what would you like to see in as part of this grand plan, this grand narrative that you mentioned a little bit earlier? I mean, can you be specific and tell us what are you hoping to see? If you could advise the people in decision-making positions right now, what would you like to see in a national pandemic management approach?
I think, first of all, we should make a heroic effort to avoid trying to call lockdowns and to prevent the need for lockdowns, and try and explore the, you know, the avenue of greater testing and tracing. As a result of that, can we find ways to improve the data coming from MySejahtera? Because the impression I get is that it's largely going to the MOH contact traces as a kind of raw data dump. They may have resolved that by now, but they've had to resort to the old school method of doing analog tracing, which clearly, you know, it's not desirable in the digital age. Maybe we can do better there. Secondly, I think we should synchronize finance and health measures, like I mentioned earlier, that they should be tightly coordinated. If you know that there's going to be a sort of health crunch coming, then get the finance ready. At the same time, thirdly, the financial firepower needs to be adequate. I think last year's budget was over optimistic in how quickly and how successfully we could rebound in 2021. So we didn't budget as much as we may have needed in order to drive a stronger recovery, even with last year's MCO, and let alone with the double MCO so far in the first month of this year. We just need more financial firepower coming in to support our, you know, frontliners in MOH. We need to support the businesses, and we need to support workers and the people who are staying at home and finding it hard to make money.
Xiaolong, I understand that, you know, there was in fact a call for the budget to reflect at least like 6% of it going to the health system. That was not achieved by some accounts. But I do want to ask you about education, because it does seem that some of the long-term consequences of the of this particular year that we've had have fallen very heavily on the shoulders of young people, people in schools. And there seems to be a lack of coherence about whether schools are open, how they can be open, how we can level the playing field for in a country where the digital divide is a reality that's come to really, you know, impress itself upon us during this pandemic. I mean, do you have any thoughts about the whole question of education and this lost generation that we might, in fact, be, you know, seeing come to bear in a couple of years' time?
I think education, there are at least two areas in which it needs to intersect with any national grand plan. And the first is to try and figure out a way in which students can go back to school safely and get back to their educational sources. We need to also figure out ways in which we can maybe improve the infrastructure and the ability to observe the proper physical distancing and SOPs in schools. And the way in which the school term, when it starts, when it finishes, needs to be clearly communicated and synchronized with the national pandemic plan. And finally, on the education front, we need a recovery plan for education as well. We need to figure out what to do with all the kids who have had a year of lost education and possibly even another year of lost education. What is that going to do to this generation, to this cohort, when it finally comes to taking critical you know, junctures like exams, like seeking work, like trying to get to university and so forth? What is going to happen to them, especially if they're from lower income classes and more disadvantaged families who may not have access to computing and digital online learning? That is a major, I think, future social problem that we are going to have to tackle.
Well, Xiaolong, thank you for joining us on the show tonight and sharing your insights. And thank you to you and your, the co-author of your opinion piece for writing that that and highlighting that issue. Thank you for your time. That's all we
thank
have
you.
For you on this episode of Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Kutan, signing off for the evening.
Thank you so much for watching, and good night.